You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of November 18th, 2020, and it's time to get dual sensitive.
Experience Points Podcast. I'm George Albor.
My name is Scott Juster.
We're the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net, a serious but in a humorless conversation about video games. All the newest, latest video games.
The newest, latest boxes.
Last week we talked about how the PlayStation 5 is unreviewable. This week, we review it.
Boom.
We're talking a little bit about the PS5 because I got my hands on it and have been playing some Demon's Souls. I also just want to talk about Demon's Souls.
Oh,
Scott,
yeah.
Played the original Demon's Souls, and despite my fanaticism over the Soulsborne series, I never played Demon's Souls, so you actually know more about this game than I do. So maybe with our brains combined, we can talk about some of those changes, as well as just some of the general thoughts on some of what the PlayStation 5 has to offer at this point.
For sure. Yeah, I have waited to buy one until, I don't know, maybe a couple more games or so come out, but yep. Like it's I'm probably not too far off. Like the other thing too is my PS4 is starting to really crap out. I mean, even if it was just a straight up upgrade where it's like, hey, I need a new console, like it would be pretty much worth it. So I'm basically running that into the ground before I get it. But I'm interested to hear. So like, question number one: how's your back?
Because
you had to lift that thing into your house.
So when I set it up, I got it on a Saturday, and Nicole was visiting her parents, and she's taking care of her parents. And when she got back, no joke, her first line was like,
why
would
you need another refrigerator?
Thing? Yeah, she was like, what is that thing? It's so ugly. And I was like, look, I know. I fucking hate it. I told her I hate it. I think it's fucking hideous. I will not go back on my original shock at the monstrosity that is the PlayStation 5. Mm-hmm. I genuinely think it's an absolute trash fire of visual design. So don't at me. I tried to buy day one a replacement plate because there was a service that was going around called Plate Station where they would sell you a custom plate. And I was like, okay, great. This thing is fucking hideous. The least I can do is replace the white plates with black ones, so it fades into the background of my cabinet. Sony sued them into the ground. They offered refunds on all of the plates, and so I no longer have a replacement. I have to use the white one, at least until Sony releases or sells their own versions of these. So it stands out like a sore thumb. It is fucking massive. The space where I put these in, like, you know, I don't have it vertically. I have it horizontally.
So I was going to ask that because I think we have the same, I think we have the same IKEA TV stand. It's like three-panel one. Like
Takes up the entire slot. It's like a piece of fucking toast in there, Scott. It's horrible.
Because I was looking at it, mine, and I was like, would a PS5 fit in there?
It's a terrible place to put it, to be perfectly, because like there's no heat exchange going on in there,
right?
You know, like it fills to the side.
It's a cubby.
It's really a truly bad idea to put it in there, but it is what it is. I'm not going to put this thing. Yeah, exactly. Where am I going to put it? I'm not going to display it vertically because I'm not a psychopath, right?
Well, and also you probably don't want to like put earthquake anchors into the wall near it just in case it falls down. You know?
Right. The stand. You need to have.
Tell me about the like hideaway screw and everything. Like, I want to hear about the workmanship here.
So this stand is basically another plastic device. The PlayStation 5 has to use a stand, no matter what way you lay it. It is not designed to sit on its own. Period. Right. The plastic that is used, it feels like a third-party plastic prop, and it connects to the back of the PlayStation 5 by basically just sliding over the plastic and kind of like being, you know, kind of firm in there. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have like discrete slots where it slides in. It just sort of, you know, it's like marked with a little bit of, you know, PlayStation square triangle X icons. Uh-huh. And you just slide it in and then have this sort of flat circular plate on the bottom. It doesn't seem especially stable horizontally, and because it only slides in and doesn't lock in, when you take the PlayStation out, if it drags, it will fall off of the PlayStation. and then you'll have to sort of reattach it, which is a huge pain in my ass.
So it doesn't screw into it.
It does not. I mean, as far as I know, there were no screws. It just slides on. You don't screw it on.
I could have sworn I saw a video where there was like a screw holder inside of it. Like there was a little slot in the thing that if you weren't using it in a certain orientation, it like it was like a little pocket or something that, hid in there.
Yes, I see what you mean. There is a little screw thing, but it secures. It doesn't really secure the place it to the PlayStation itself. It secures the sort of knob thing. I could be wrong, by the way. I could have totally fucked up my setup of the PlayStation 5. The point is, I don't think it looks great. It's just kind of a weird... The fact that I need a stand at all is weird, like when you really just want to sit it horizontally in particular. Right. So I think it's hideous.
Do you think Frank Gehry is in active litigation against this thing or what?
I mean, honestly, it looks like a piece of modernist architecture you would see in like Brazil or something, you know? Like it is a beast.
But here's a question though. Is it quiet?
It is significantly quieter than the PlayStation 4. I have not been playing any games that require discs, so I can't speak to the spin of the disc, but it is significantly quieter. Yeah. I mean, and certainly if you don't already have a PlayStation Pro, then you probably have a PlayStation that sounds very, very loud.
Yeah. I mean, mine is if I'm playing anything with any intensity, like if I'm playing anything that is not, you know, Spelunky or whatever, it gets pretty loud. But and it would be a major benefit for me if I had a quieter console out there.
Yeah, and you know, besides me thinking that it's just a disgusting piece of design, the setup was very easy. Like it is a good recommend for the ease of transition.
Right.
You know, if you have a PlayStation 4 hooked to your Wi-Fi as well, then you can just automatically bring over the data from the PlayStation 4 to your PlayStation 5 and not sweat a little bit.
What data does it bring over? Is it like full games or does it just look for your saves or like,
I think
what's
it mostly just looks for saves, but because of my, you know, I'm just a paranoid weirdo, I backed up my files on a USB drive and then completely wiped my PlayStation 4 before booting up the PS5. So I didn't realize it had that option. So I had to manually download all of my saves off of an external drive. But it is much easier than that if you are upgrading from a PlayStation 4. It should just bring over your save files as well as your settings, which is very, very convenient. Yeah.
Do you think it could just bring the saves from... the cloud as well?
It absolutely can. That's exactly what I did. I ended up not bringing over the save files from from the USB, and I just pulled them from the cloud instead.
Well, you got to hang on to that shit anyway because of PT, so you know,
that's right.
Put that in a bunker somewhere.
So yeah, it was quite easy to set up, and the UI I think is good. Like it doesn't seem like a huge departure from the original PlayStation. Yeah. It doesn't have the slides, but it still has all of the components where you expect them to be. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean it looks visually very good.
Have you gone into any of that new social stuff that they've been talking about?
Not really. What have they been talking about? What in particular?
I saw some of the... I mean, again, I don't know how much of this stuff was live on day one or launch or whatever, but they were showing some interesting things about how parties are created and like you can share media in a better way, theoretically in a better way. The one that was very interesting was like tips in about games that you were in. Like they called them like moments or something. I forget what they called it, but...
I haven't looked any because for fear of spoilers, right? Like I bought the PlayStation 5 literally for Demon's Souls.
The Demon's Souls machine.
I don't want it tarnished, so I have not been looking at any of that stuff. I have seen it pop up though. The parties is a little bit easier. Going into your party settings on the original PlayStation 4 UI is kind of a pain in the butt.
Yeah.
They have a setup now when you're looking at your friends list that will automatically show you what parties are available.
Right.
So it's easier and it makes sense that the parties are now part of that same sort of friends social circle.
Right.
The game tips, I don't know yet. I do know that there's a setting when you're first setting up the PlayStation 5 that will allow you to decide whether or not it shows you those tips at all.
Right.
And I changed it so that it was very spoiler specific. So you would only see updates from the publisher on the titles that you have. But I do, I think you're right. I think there is more robust like tips and news updates.
Yeah.
You know, we're in a world where every single website on the internet wants permission to send you push notifications. And I hate that world. And I've disabled a lot of those offerings on the PlayStation 4 and I continue to disable them on PlayStation 5. I have all of my except for friends coming online, which I'm gonna take off also. I have no notifications that appear on my PlayStation 5, and I think that that is how the good Lord intended it.
I remember because it's been a bit of a journey for Sony to get to this point, but I remember enjoying when they rolled out. I thought that they did a pretty good job on here's who can message you or see your activity or whatever, and like it was actually a pretty
friends
clear exactly like or the difference between a friend and a close friend, I thought was pretty interesting, like stuff that I thought they were actually ahead of the game, you know, versus like one of the social media companies or something. So it seems like that sort of thing, if they could build on that, would be useful.
I mean, so far so good. So
how about the control? That's what I'm very interested in.
Yeah, that was the first thing I was interested in also. And even though I had Demon's Souls ready to go, the first thing I booted up was actually, I think it's called Astro's Playroom. Which they also released for the PlayStation 4 to show that off. The control is very good. It's actually just as good as everyone said it was. Wow. The refinement on the vibration is exquisite. It really feels like the sound and the vibrations are coming from like discrete locations in the controller.
Right.
You know, I think one of the examples they use is the motion controls where you can like tip it. And as you tip it, it's almost like, you know, sand or balls are falling from one direction or another. I think that's totally effective. I think that's a really cool feature and it absolutely works. They also change it. They showcased it in Playroom. In one of the early levels, you're kind of walking along a beach, but there's also like a dock and the water. And as you move, depending on what type of material you're on, the vibrations at the controller change to be a little bit more subtle. So you're not click clacking, you know, a deep resonant sound when you're on wood or when you're on sand. You hear like the softer, you know, almost like tiny little vibrations that the controller delivers to reflect that movement. That works really, really well. There's a lot of sound that also comes from the controller, and it's a little bit, I think it's going to be a little bit irritating, as I've never been a big fan of that, to be honest, because the sound quality is never going to be very good if it's coming from your controller. And as a result, it can sometimes feel a little bit off. And so I'm concerned about games that lean too heavily into that gimmick of sound coming from the controller. Demon's Souls, for example, a lot of the sounds of your weapon hitting on things or when you're walking comes from the controller. And it's a little much. I think it's excessive in
That's surprising that they push that stuff into the controller, like just for the weapons and everything.
Yeah, it's definitely a little weird. I think the touchpad is good, but honestly, I think the PlayStation 4 touchpad was good. I never really had any complaints with how that was implemented or its sensitivity. I do think the PlayStation 5 is a refinement on that. But, you know, I never felt like there was a game that particularly was a good showcase of using the touchpad, you know, outside of like basic, oh, you're unzipping the Sackboy or something like that.
Well, I think what did we just play? Ghost of Tsushima, where I had the different gestures for this is the flute, this is the wind, this is the map, you know, that sort of thing was rare but useful when it had it.
Right, but all you needed that to do was function in the way that you expect it to, where swiping left does X, not you know, how sensitive is the swipe or where on the square is the swipe. I think that's just going to continue to be the case. One weird call out, and this is going to sound bizarre, but I mentioned this because I didn't see this come up in other reviews, but there's a slight gap between the controller and the touchpad component where crumbs can fall into. And I'm a little concerned.
The Cheeto Canyon.
I'm a little concerned that like, after a while, the Dorito dust will pile so high in my touchpad that it's just not going to work anymore.
You mean that's not a feature where it's like the Dorito dust will be in there and then it will create a single clean pane across the entire controller?
I mean, maybe it will supercharge my
controller.
Mortar. I don't know. I'm just saying, look, I'm a person that is relatively clean, but shit happens and controllers can get really fucking gross. So just keep an eye out for that.
How's the hand feel? Like, how's it feel in the hand?
It's great. It's more robust than the last PlayStation. It's like the Xbox controller and the PlayStation controller had a baby, and this is the result.
The freakish, unnatural result.
It's funny, because I've been playing a lot of Spelunky on PC using my Xbox controller, and then going back to the PlayStation 5. In a way, I still prefer the Xbox controller. I just I mean, ergonomically, that's one of the best controllers ever made, and it's very right. smart that Sony moved closer to that.
Right.
Even if not on top of it.
Right.
I think the battery life is a little short. That's one color I would have for the PlayStation 5 controllers. I wonder if that's a factor of all the vibrations and
maybe.
Sounds, though.
Yeah. I remember that my DualShock controllers have bad battery life, too. Like, even compared to, like, my Switch Pro controller, which feels like I could charge. It feels like I've had the Switch Pro controller for years and I've charged it like twice. You know, like it just lasts a long time. Whereas the DualShock, I definitely have to remember to charge it after I'm done playing.
I mean, one of the things that I did early on as a result of that was get a docking station, and now I have four useless PlayStation 4 controllers. But I'm gonna have to, I'm literally
well, you
going
can use
to
them with
get...
the console if you really. I guess if you ever play a large scale multiplayer game.
For that's true, yeah, that could be an option. But in either case, I think that if you are someone like me that you know puts in long sessions, at least for now, I would recommend getting a docking station. I find it myself running low on battery and forgetting, and it's always nice to just have a second one there. Sony released a docking station day and date with the PlayStation 5 ready to go. So you know, I think they're fully aware. That's just kind of the reality we live in now, right? Like, you're always charging something, whether it's your phone, a controller, a Kindle, whatever.
Headphones.
My headphones, like, I'm charging them all the time. You will be always charging a PlayStation 5 controller.
I'm glad that they spent a lot of time getting the docking station to market, and also had the time to squash the plates that you wanted ever so dearly.
Yeah, exactly. The double whammy. I wish they had come out like day one with the plates, though, you know? I mean, even being able to have custom plates for some of the launch titles, like, you know, if Spider-Man Miles Morales is going to be dropping day one, give me his dope Spider-Man plate at least, you know?
Right.
If everyone has to look at that monstrosity in my cabinet, at least make it Spider-Man themed.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
What else? Anything else on the actual machine itself?
I mean, in terms of performance, because it's, you know, one of the first things you want to do is look at, like, oh, how pretty is it? Does it look really cool? It does exactly as much as you expect it would. I've been playing Demon's Souls, which looks gorgeous, but I've also been playing Spider-Man Miles Morales, which looks really good. You know, the scenes where you have. There are certain scenes where the ray tracing is on and you know it because the lighting is just exquisite. Like, everything is reflected beautifully off of these marbled surfaces. And you know that it just wouldn't look like that without that technology. My one complaint, and maybe this is more of a complaint for the Miles Morales setup, but for Miles Morales, there's two modes that you can have your visual settings towards. One is performance and the other is fidelity. And fidelity means that you're running at around 30 frames per second variable, and all of the ray tracing and the high resolution is activated.
Right.
Or you can set to lock it at 60 frames per second, but it removes ray tracing and all of the other visual boosts. I find that I wish there was more refinement in my ability to set my preferences, because there is no world. Like, I'm glad I got the PlayStation 5. It looks gorgeous. But there's just no world where I don't want to play in 60 frames per second if it's not possible.
Right.
Especially for, like, action games.
Yeah.
Certainly for Demon's Souls. But for something like Spider-Man, even, if I had the ability to, say, keep ray tracing but have a higher frame rate but play in 1080p upscaled or something, I would rather do that. Because then at least I would have the beautiful lighting and still maintain a buttery smooth frame rate.
It feels like we're in a really awkward stage with all that stuff where we have the technology to do all these things, but not simultaneously. And so we're in this really, like, you have to pick and choose, and it gets a little confusing. And, you know, some TVs can do the 120 hertz, but they can't do other, or some TVs can do 4K, but they're not, like, 120 hertz ready, or, you know, HDR is kind of confusing depending on where you're getting the input signal. Like, I think it's weird. Like, we've found ourselves in this area where we have all the pieces and we haven't quite put them together yet.
Yeah. I mean, look, I think we've made this clear on the podcast before, but if anyone is listening and has any doubts, if you are a PC gamer and you feel comfortable in that space, just get a new GTX graphics card.
3080 or whatever. Yeah.
The new those new graphics cards and like a decent monitor, and you can have your cake and eat it too in a way that you will never have because on the PlayStation 5.
Yeah.
Or the Xbox Series S. Like, if you really want 60 frames per second and ray tracing and beautiful stuff, you can have that on PC. It is within grasp. It's a little bit expensive, but things are really affordable right now. And, you know, like, if you don't need a PlayStation 5, there's no reason to buy one.
Yeah. It's just, I wonder what the... I'm kind of assuming that the iterative console cycle is probably here to stay. You know, it seems like it was successful for them last time, so they would probably want to do it again. And so it makes me think of maybe they can tie some of that stuff together next time around, where it's like
PS5 Pro.
Exactly. If you have the PS5 Pro, you don't have to worry about the trade-offs. We're just going to say that, you know, you can have this always on, assuming that your monitor can accept it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Talk to me about Demon's Souls.
Yes.
Man, it's been so many years since I've entered into Boletaria, but I still remember it.
It's so funny because I have a copy of PlayStation 3 Demon's Souls in my cabinet, which I've never played.
It's like a cursed thing, though. You're walking around on the street, and some cursed vendor was like, "Hey, boy, come over here."
Loved the Soulsborne game so much, and honestly, playing Demon's Souls now feels like slipping into a warm pair of pajamas. Like
a maggot infested.
It's such a bizarre feeling. Like, you know, one of the other days, like, I had a really busy work day. I was very stressed out, and I went to go play Demon's Souls. And I know that for a lot of people, that sounds like a nightmare. That the Soulsborne series sounds so hard, and they're just not into it. And I went in and I played and I died for like a couple of stupid reasons. You know, at one point, like, someone left a sign that was warning me there was an enemy, but I thought it was going to be Trixie, and then said the enemy like pushed me off a cliff, for example.
Oh, yeah. Classic.
Hilarious. And I was just like cackling with laughter and I loved every second of it. The idea that Demon's Souls, the remake, has cleaned things up, made it more visually appealing, made it a bit more... Dark Souls like in the now 8 different directions you can roll rather than the original 4 cardinal directions in the original Dark Souls. I think it makes it closer to what my expectation of a modern Soulsborne would be.
Yeah.
And as a result, that is where I'm getting a lot of this joy and comfort. Like the moment I'm in those worlds and I'm picking weapon and rolling around and like attacking things and backstabbing them, I speak the language now, and it's almost shocking to me how fluent I've become in the language of Soulsborne games.
Yep.
Because even when first playing Dark Souls 3, you know, I had played Bloodborne and loved it, but there was a big learning curve. There was a big stark difference between those two. There's bad lessons that you carry over from Bloodborne to Dark Souls. But since then, you know, I've platinumed Bloodborne. I've played Dark Souls 3 and finished it like 7 times. I've done like a level 30 run. I play the game, both of those games, every year.
Right.
More so than any other game, I have played those Soulsborne games.
Yep.
Now when I'm going into Demon's Souls, it really just feels like home away from home, you know? And I love it. I absolutely love it. There are quality of life things that are weird. It's very strange having to worry about storage space, which is not something you worry about in the Soulsborne games. You worry about equip load, but not storage space, which I think is very bizarre. I kind of wish they just removed that. I don't see how that's significant or important, this experience. I'm also struck by how interesting it is to have literally a hub that is the Nexus in Demon's Souls and no direction about which Archstone you have to go to first. There's no linear path. I can just choose whichever world I want to go to. And I assume I'm just going to go to, like, you know, world 1-1-1 2-1, 3-1, 4-1, and then back to 1-2, 2-2, so on and so forth. But it's a very different experience. One that I think is less of a refinement, right? Like, I think that you can see in Demon's Souls the bones that are the foundation upon which they built this franchise that is so successful. Because what I miss, right, is the ability to be at the top of a peak and look down into a whole nother world, and I'm looking at the swamp, right? Like, it is one cohesive world, which Demon's Souls is not. That being said, the individual worlds, they feel great. They look great. Yeah. Boletaria has that classic gothic look that is very much like Dark Souls, and navigating that feels good. I just went to the stone area underground where there's like, you know, weird dwarves and stuff. Fits within the realm. Like, piercing weapons have to kill these guys. Like, it is very cool. It's very clean. And I'm so glad that I'm enjoying it.
Do I recall correctly that in Demon's Souls you have to like equip your curative items? Like, you just don't have like a flask button. You have to like get the herbs, put them on a button.
And there's like three different kinds of herbs. That was definitely weird as well. And you could see why it's such a huge improvement to have an Estus flask. You know, not only because now I don't have to, you know, right now I have to worry about buying or finding enough of these herbs, which is annoying. It's almost like Resident Evil or something. But in Dark Souls, knowing that I can run out of Estus Flask is in and of itself an enjoyable trait, right? Because you have to decide, do I use it now? What is the most efficient way to use it, right? And while you're thinking about that with the herbs, when you've got 50 herbs in your inventory, you're just eating those things like they're fucking Pop Rocks, you know? Like, you're just slamming those things down.
Did they... Well, actually, two things. One is I recall when I was playing Dark Souls 3 thinking that there was a lot of borrowing from Demon's Souls in it. Even in the Firelink Shrine, it reminded me a lot of Dark Souls, like that hub world of Dark Souls. How has that been? Like, did they keep that motif, or did they revise it to make it look different?
No, I mean, it looks very, very similar. The Nexus is huge, though. And it is very, like, nice architecture. All of the bonfires, I mean, certainly in Dark Souls 3, but even Dark Souls 2, like, it is, you know, it's a bonfire in the middle of ruins. It doesn't feel like a safe space, whereas the Nexus feels like this holy shrine. So I think that is missing. It also, I don't know if this was in the original game, but there's this upper section of the Nexus where it's like a Hall of Fame, and there's altars where you could see, like, who has the fastest run of Demon's Souls.
Yeah.
Did that exist?
I think that was in the first game.
It's such a cool idea to be able to go and look at, like, oh, man, this guy beat the game in 1 hour. What? Super cool. I love the idea of having, like, a public visible space to spotlight what is to come, right? Because people are going to beat this game way faster than whoever beat it today, you know? Like, there's some really awesome ways of, like, recognizing people in there.
Are they still doing the really the world tendency stuff?
What is the world tendency stuff?
Oh, man. So there's this whole mechanic in Demon's Souls called, I think they called it world tendency, you know, like a black white dichotomy, depending on what you're doing in the game. And so depending on actions you take, certain other parts of the game would be affected. Some of it was story based. I think some of it was also mechanical based, but the world tendency was also impacted by the macro player base. So if players were making all similar types of decisions, they could shift the world tendency a certain way versus the other, versus just you doing it yourself.
Oh, interesting. I have no idea. I do know that there have been some references I've caught to, like, pure white or like neutral white.
So that's what it is. There's like certain tendencies. I forget how many there are, but that's the phrasing that they used for it.
Interesting. Man, I love that kind of shit. I love knowing, like, it's such, the great thing about Soulsborne games too, right? Is when you go in and you don't know what's to come, everything is a treat. You know, it's like an advent calendar. Every time I play Demon's Souls, it's like an advent calendar of, like, I don't know what's down this hole, but I'm about to find out and die.
Did they include the what do they call it? Red spirits and the invasions and such?
I assume so. I haven't done any invasions. I have been summoned in other people's worlds to help them out in boss fights.
Yeah.
It's a little bit different. In Dark Souls, if I want to join someone's world to help them out, I can lay down my mark, and then when I help them, I respawn in my world, and I could just go back and lay down my mark again. But you can only lay down your mark if you're dead, if you don't have a soul, essentially. And if you help someone and they successfully defeat the boss, you regain your soul.
Yeah,
exactly. So there's no way to farm souls in Demon Souls by helping people with co-op, which is good and bad. I mean, partly it stops you from farming souls, but there's so many other ways to farm souls that it feels like that doesn't really matter. I enjoy doing boss fights and enjoy helping out people in boss fights. It's kind of a shame that that's a functionality in this one as well, that you just can't access that as easily as the original.
I mean, my overall impressions were that just, I think part of it is style, part of it is just an accident of where they were on the evolution of these games. But Demon's Souls is just a harsher deal. You know, yeah. Like it's the rules of invasions, the rules of, you know, what it means to be hollowed versus human. I mean, all of this stuff is just a little bit more harsh. The yeah. fact that you have to hold all of your items before you use them, like all that stuff, like, and then they started to zero in on some more of the like world exploration and combat stuff versus RPG-esque inventory management, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it kind of makes me sad now thinking about how much I disliked Sekiro and I've soured on that game.
Right.
In the series, because I think that they've refined it better and better and better and then took a step back with Sekiro.
Yeah.
And looking at Demon's Souls, you could see how close they are to really being where, you know, where they would one day be. Like, yes. I think Demon's Souls, especially because it's a, you know, a PlayStation 3 game, looks and probably feels dated if you play the original. Yeah. But playing the remake now, you can actually, it feels as though they were really ahead of their time and really found some things in Demon's Souls that would be refined, but only a little bit. You know, like, it's already great. It's just they added that little extra piece of, you know, salt and pepper and finished seasoning their creation.
Man, so just some like rapid fire Demon Souls things. So I remember chasing lizards constantly.
Yes, dude, I found a room with like 15 lizards in them and I only killed one. And I'm like, motherfucker, now I have to like die and come back and do this all over again.
And I think there's a limited number of them. Like, I think once you get them,
that's the case in all of the Soulsborne games as well.
I remember the early Boletaria. I remember just getting roasted by the dragon a lot.
Yeah, what's so funny though is I'm used to the same bullshit from dragons, and so I waited it out and played it exactly like all the other dragons in the Soulsborne games. It was like easy.
It was so funny playing that originally because it was the first one I had ever played. I really knew nothing about the game. I was just kind of playing it blind and walking up that very long parapet where the dragon is like on the other end of it and just like whoosh, like you're gone.
Yeah, that's so funny.
Oh man. And there's all those skeleton guys in that early thing too, like those.
Yeah, I just went to the Shrine of Storms or something, and there's like a bunch of skeleton people there.
Oh, that was the one with the weird like flying manta ray things, right?
I have not met any manta rays, but I cannot wait.
Maybe that was in Dark Souls. They start to blend together a little bit. I think Demon Souls is where they introduce the like grotesque squid faced people.
Call of Cthulhu guys, like mind flayers from D&D.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I think there's like a prison level that I remember having to spend a lot of time on because of all those things.
You know, I do actually want to shout out real quick. How amazing is it that Bluepoint built a studio that basically is the studio you go to for remastering a game?
Totally. I mean,
Demon's Souls Remaster is very strong and a huge undertaking. Like, this is this is basically like a new game built upon those backbones. They redid Shadow of Colossus, which was excellent. I know they remastered, I think, all of the Uncharted games.
Yeah, they're the ones that have been doing it since. I feel like they even did the like God of War games when they put them out on other consoles. Like, they've been doing this sort of, I mean, they're specialists at this point.
Have they ever done their own game?
I don't know, actually.
Weird.
I mean, not that I know of.
I mean, good for them, you know, like just keep it up, because there's a lot of great games that could use the love. And, you know, it feels like, so I've been watching this British reality television show called The Repair Shop, where people will bring like cherished family items and antiques to these people that will fix them up for free. And they're like, you know, exquisite at their job. They take these, you know, rundown steam engine toys from like 1920s and make them like they're brand new. This is what Bluepoint feels like to me.
Right.
Like an antiques repair shop for video games.
I mean, it's it's the way you even said it of like, have they made their own game? It feels like this and Shadow of the Colossus are basically their own games. Like they are, yeah. They're clearly doing, it's clearly homage and a loving tribute to the original games, but from the ground up, everything is completely new, you know? So it's a very honestly, weird niche to be in.
And we need it, right? Like from just a, like if you think about it from a genuine, how do you repair an antique?
Yeah.
I think they're doing a killer job. I think this is the type of studio that needs to exist. If we, people like getting remasters, there's old games that are hard to find that yeah. work atrociously, that we don't have the hardware for to play again, but are these pieces of historical artifacts that are very, very important. And doing a full remaster and an undertaking like Demon's Souls, where, you know, you fix some elements and you change it, so it's not the exact same thing, but yeah. it's enough of a connection to that original, and so much of it is, you know, just sort of straight remaking it, but like yep. polishing it and improving it. It's so important for putting it in the hands of people again. I'm not, despite my love of Soulsborne, I'm not convinced I would have ever played Demon's Souls were it not for the remaster. And right. to that alone, right. just massive hats off to Bluepoint yeah. for doing so far an amazing job on the remake.
Well, and it's even more cool for them because they're effectively the standard bearer for this new machine.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Yeah. It's yeah, I mean, that's a great point for the PlayStation 5. Like, yeah. there's no launch titles, but the launch title, for at least for me, the system seller, is a remake from a studio that never made this game. And they're out of Austin. They're not even Japanese.
It's also strange that it's also a funny narrative for the Soulsborne series and From Software genre, you know, specifically, where the reason why I played Demon's Souls the first time was because they were going to shut down the servers because it wasn't popular and no one was playing it. And so I was like, well, I better play this game because they're going to shut down the multiplayer servers. And I heard that they're doing some weird shit in multiplayer in this game. And that was like, I don't know, 10 or 11 years ago or something. And now they've gone from almost shutting down the servers because no one is playing it to being the marquee title of a new console.
Yeah, that is wild, man. Like, what a story. What a
crazy like roller coaster for that whole genre.
It really is. It really is. Now just give me Elden Ring and Bloodborne 2, and then I'll shut up.
We'll get to work.
Get to work, team.
Well, it's cool. I mean, I'm pleasantly surprised that the PS5 is a standard and good improvement, even though it is potentially buckling the foundation of your house.
Yeah. Yeah, very true. It is a heavy monstrosity.
All right. I guess we'll leave it there for now. We'll come back with more PS5 stuff as in the coming months once we yeah. get some new games on that thing.
Bug snacks.
Yeah, we'll talk about... We're both talking about... I am still in the process of snacking, and George has finished it, so that'll probably come up very soon. But, mm-hmm. man... experiencepoints@gmail.com is our email address.
And experiencepoints.net is our website. You can find our podcast wherever you find podcasts, iTunes, Stitcher. Do us a favor, leave us a review, and tell your friends.
Cool. Until next time, everybody, thank you so much for listening. We will talk to you next week.
Ciao. Every time we disagree.